Find more State House coverage at sdpb.org.
The South Dakota Senate Transportation Committee will come to order. If you have a cell phone, either turn it off or put it on vibrate. It's a courtesy to the witnesses, the audience, and the committee. Thank you. Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Frisley?
Here.
Hansen? Howie?
Here.
Klocek?
Here.
Maher?
Here.
Schmidt?
Here.
Valley?
Here. We have a quorum this morning. On behalf of the chair, I want to welcome the audience here and also those folks on the internet. We have some pages here this morning. I'm going to ask them to step over to the mic and introduce themselves and tell us who you are and where you're from.
I'm Shiloh Day from Highmore.
And I'm Jasmine Myers from Huron.
Thank you. If anyone has any handouts this morning during testimony, please give that to the pages and they will distribute it. If you are testifying this morning, anyone can testify for themselves. If you're testifying on behalf of an organization, make sure you are registered at the Secretary of State's office. This morning, I see we have Representative Krebs here this morning, and so we were going to take it a little out of order, but I think we're ready this morning. We will take we'll be able to take the three bills we have this morning in the order that they are on the sheet. And with that, we're going to begin public testimony on Senate Bill 1126, which is a bill. Let me read the title here.
Good morning, members of the esteemed Senate Transportation Committee. So, Mike, you have to, Mr. Chairman, like I myself, have to get used to saying House bills versus Senate bills. So this is House Bill 1126. House Bill 1126 has come to the attention of the Transportation Committee at the request of the Department of Public Safety, and you'll be hearing more from them as well. Being the prime sponsor on the House side, what it really does is very, very, very little change. The wording is for pesticide applicators, and I'm completely out of breath from taking those stairs, so for private applicators, they're changing the word and making sure we clarify in language intrastate, and that's if you look at the underlined word in the last few lines, that's the clarification there. So I'm going to turn it over to Jim Pat Fahey for Department of Public Safety, and he can clarify further. And thank you for your time this morning, and Mr. Chairman, good to see you on that side of the. I sure miss you over there, though.
Thank you, Representative.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Pat Fay with the Department of Public Safety. HB 1126 is a bill that we're using to make a better clarification in the current statute. If you recall, on Senate Bill 18, I testified that there was a minor change that we made in that bill that came as a result of a federal review of our MCSAP, or Motor Carrier Safety Assistance Program. And at that time, I mentioned that there were actually two things identified in current statute that needed to be clarified or modified, and this happens to be the second issue. This is a clarification that was identified. And just a short, brief bit of information. Some of you may be aware, but others may not, that in order to drive a commercial vehicle interstate, cross state lines, you have to be 21 years of age. There are provisions in federal law that allow the states to adopt rules to allow 18-year-olds to obtain a CDL, but they are valid for intra-state or in-state operations. South Dakota actually has taken that a step farther in our law, allows 16-year-olds to obtain a CDL for intrastate operation. The restrictions on the younger ages, however, do not allow for the operation of a vehicle that is carrying hazardous materials that requires placards, or to operate a vehicle that's transporting more than 15 passengers. You'd have to be 21 in order to do those operations, whether you're inter- or intrastate operation. In South Dakota, current statute in 4928A3.1, we have a provision in there that allows 18-year-olds to obtain a CDL if they are a certified private applicator. And this is the area of the law that, again, that would be a hazardous material type operation. And we are allowed to let these folks operate those vehicles, but it's only through intrastate operation that they're allowed to do it. The current law is implied that it's only applies to 18-year-olds because it specifically says 18-year-olds up to 21, because you have to be 21 to travel interstate. And what this does, it lets the 18-year-olds operate these vehicles that may be carrying hazardous material, but it doesn't clarify or doesn't specify that is for in-state operation only. And that's what HB 1126 does on line 6. It inserts the word intra-state driver into the current statute. It will have no effect on anyone because you have to be 21 currently in order to travel out of state. All this does is clarify and puts us in compliance with what was determined to be a not very clear statute after our federal review. The other addition that you see there, the person in the overstrike of he is a form and manner by LRC change. Again, 1126 will not affect people. I've talked with folks in the egg industry, and they have reviewed it and said that they see no effect to this. This does not restrict or allow any drivers beyond what is currently allowed. There will be no drivers that can operate because of this change. There will be no additional drivers that would be able to operate because of this change. It's simply, again, a clarification of the law. And with that, I would just ask for your support of 1126. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any questions of Mr. Fay?
All right. Further proponents of House Bill 1126. Further proponents of 1126. Further proponents, 1126, if there are none. Are there any opponents of House Bill 1126? Opponents of House Bill 1126. If there are no opponents of House Bill 1126, we will skip rebuttal. And I'll ask the committee if there is any further questions that they have of the two testifiers, the two proponents. And I see none, so we are closed to public testimony on House Bill 1126, and we will move to discussion and or action on House Bill 1126. Senator Frisley. Been moved by Senator Frisley to do pass. Do I hear a second? Seconded by Senator Schmidt. It's been moved by Senator Frisley and seconded by Senator Schmidt for a do pass motion. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay. Are there further discussion of the do pass motion? If there is none, the secretary will please call the roll.
Senators Frisley?
Aye.
Hansen? Howie?
Aye.
Klocek?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Thalle?
Aye.
601.
Mr. Chair, would it be appropriate to make consent at this time?
Just 1 minute, and well, I'll let you do that. House Bill 1126 has received a majority vote of the committee with a 6-0 vote. It moves to pass, and we'll move to the floor. It's It's been moved to take it to the consent calendar by Senator Frisley and seconded by Senator Howey. All those in favor of the motion to send that bill to the floor on the consent calendar, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. It will go to the floor on the consent calendar. Thank you, Representative Krebs. And that takes care of 1126. I see that the chairman got a little ahead of himself this morning, and he did not ask you to approve the minutes from the last meeting. And so the chair is going to ask, those minutes have been provided in your black books, and the chair would entertain a motion either to approve or amend the minutes of the last meeting. Is there... Moved by Senator Frisley and seconded by Senator Klocek to approve the minutes of the prior meeting. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The minutes are approved. Thank you. The chair will make sure he doesn't check that off his list the next time before he gets to it. Okay. The second bill we have on our calendar this morning is House Bill 1150, and it is to revise certain requirements for any person to sell motorcycles at an event to provide a penalty for violation thereof. The committee is now open to public testimony on House Bill 1150. Welcome, Senator Schmidt.
Good morning. Good morning to you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. This morning I'm speaking on Bill 1150, and I'm pleased to bring you this bill. Bill, again, is 1150 for your consideration. Several years ago, the legislature approved the purchase of a permit that allows dealers to sell motorcycles and trailers and at certain events such as Dakota Fest, State Fair, and the Sturgis Rally. As we find so often, laws need to be tweaked on occasion, and that's the purpose of this bill. Your support of House Bill 1150 will have a positive effect on motorcycles and trailer dealerships in this state. And I'd like to call on Myron Rao, who represents the South Dakota Automobile Dealers Association, and he'll further explain the details contained in this bill. And I do ask for your favorable consideration for this piece of legislation. And I'll stand by for questions if necessary.
Thank you, Senator Schmidt. Are there further proponents of House Bill 1150? Good morning, Mr. Rao.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Myron Rao, President and Registered Lobbyist for the South Dakota Auto Dealers Association. The Auto Dealers Association, just to point out again to the committee, we represent the recreational vehicle franchise dealers, the motorcycle or power sport dealers, as we call them, the heavy truck dealers, and also the car dealers. As Senator Schmidt indicated, several years ago, we enabled the dealers of trailers and motorcycles to display at events. And a good example is the Sturgis Rally, where, you know, we got 300,000 bikers from all over the country come here. It's a good venue for display of new equipment in addition to sale of new equipment. The issue is we have some very good franchise law in this state, and I want to explain, first of all, to the committee the necessity of franchise law. The dealers in this state, as they do in other states, invest in the community. They build a brick-and-mortar building. They employ technical employees that can fix these vehicles and so on and so forth. So they've made an investment in the community. And for that reason, this body has chosen to protect the rights of those dealers. In other words, we can't let somebody come in here and basically steal sales from our dealers. We have to protect the rights of those dealers that have made that investment. So as a result, a few years ago, there was a permit created that allows display of all kinds of motorcycles, all kinds of brands, but sale was only allowed if there was not a franchise dealer within the borders of South Dakota. That protects those rights. So in other words, if there's a Honda dealer down the road 10 miles or 50 miles down the road, you can't sell Hondas. But if there isn't a dealer, then they can sell. An example of those that aren't franchised in this state are like Big Dog, American Iron Horse, Boss Hoss, and several other brands. They're not built here. They're not sold here. They can actually sell on the streets of Sturgis or Dakota Fest or whatever it may be. The issue that came up last year during the Sturgis rally was we did have two types or two models that I choose to remain nameless unless you force it out of me, that were selling on the street in Sturgis. Now, I'm a biker. I was at the Sturgis rally, and I get a call from an angry dealer, and I'd prefer to get that call again. I asked the question of what did have you called DMV, because they're the overseer of this process. The permit that's enabled in this legislation, and or you can read in the legislation, was enabled in past legislative sessions, allows that permit during these events to be bought, and if they buy it, then they can do that. Well, we had two of them, like I said, sold that were franchised down the road 20 and 50 miles, and the dealer was upset. When they called DMV, we realized there was not a penalty provision in that section, which then brought us to this point. And I'm sure the committee all knows, I'm a former state trooper, retired. One thing that bothers me about a lot of laws is that we just put penalties on it. We put a $50, a $500, or a $1,000 penalty, and what does that accomplish? My opinion, there was a better answer here. Rather than making them pay a $500 penalty when they violate the provisions, in this bill, if you read the last line of each section, it says that a permit will be denied for 12 months after the violation. So in other words, they can't come back to the Sturgis rally for a year. I think that's a more serious penalty, and they'll consider it more than paying $500 when they probably made $5,000 or $10,000 or $20,000 while they were there. So my attempt was to, again, the last line says, any person found to be in violation of the provisions contained in this subdivision shall be denied a temporary permit for a period of 1 year from the date of violation. Again, trying to work hand-in-hand with state government after this was drafted, I sent it to the director of the DMV, and as a result, Deb Hilmer wanted to make the fees in all of these sections uniform. So you'll see that the fees have changed in every section in order to get that uniformity that she wanted. And I will ask that she explain why that was important to her. Again, our part of this was basically to get a penalty put in there so that this happens again. There is something they can do. Now, in the House, the conversation was, well, maybe we should make this a Class 6 felony. Maybe we should make it a death penalty. And it was joking, but I'm just saying we've chosen that it's a better way, rather than monetarily, to just say you can't come back. If you do this for 1 year, you can't come back. And I think that's a much better solution. Money isn't what it's about. It's to make sure that they do it right. So, again, with that, I would stand by for any questions that you may have. And, again, the South Dakota Auto Dealers Association would appreciate your favorable support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rao. Is there any questions of Mr. Rao while he is at Senator Hawley?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of questions, if you don't mind. One is why a year instead of 5 years? And the second question might be if someone has to stay away a year, what's to prevent them if you're compelled to stay away for a year, I don't see anything in the statute that really deals with the issue if your brother gets a license or a permit and comes back next year, what have we really accomplished?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to attempt to answer your question. If I didn't, please ask again. Just to tell you, first of all, the 5 years versus 1 year, that's up to this body. I just chose to start small. And again, as Representative Nygaard said in the House, you know, if this keeps becoming continues to be a problem, bring it back and we'll make it a death penalty. That was the joke over there. I mean, we're trying to do something rather than nothing, and maybe we will be back again. Maybe next year we're going to say $1,000 plus a year. We don't know, but this is the first attempt. The other part, you know, we're trying to, whatever we do, we always try to take care of that local dealer or the franchise dealer. The franchise guys make the investment, as I've indicated, and need some type of protection. If the guy that applies for the permit, first of all, has to meet the requirements of the state that they're in, so they have to have a franchise. So the guy that was here last year, one of the guys, was from Florida. Well, in order to get the permit, when he applies to DMV, they make sure that they're in good standing and they have the bond and all the requirements in that state. So it's not quite as simple as just having your brother, your cousin, or your neighbor, because it's not that simple. So, you know, again, we're saying it's an attempt, and it could happen. We understand that, and the DMV director will say that. This doesn't close the hole completely, but it makes it more difficult. We're not saying it's going to fix it. Again, as Senator Schmidt indicated, it's tweaking, and this tweaking may not be over. But that's the best way I can answer your question, Senator.
Thank you. Senator
President. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I too was concerned with the year, but I was wondering, could they actually be back at the rally the next year if the infraction occurred at the first part of the rally?
Mr. Chairman, first of all, there's a due process issue here. So they will not be asked on the first year. Let's say that the 2010 rally, that we have this happen. DMV will not go there, drag them out of Sturgis, kicking and screaming. And throw, so that the violation occurred then, so they couldn't come back to the next rally. And there's a due process issue also where they could appeal to the department before they're actually told they can't come back. So yes and no, I guess, is the answer. A two-year deal or a three-year deal or a five-year deal might be better, but then again, how far do you want to go with it? If they're going to come back and display a new product the next year, something that's brand-new, state-of-the-art, and they can and show that equipment to 300,000 people, and they do it right, we don't have a problem with that, because the dealer down the road, 40 miles, 20 miles, that has that product for sale, he'd like that advertisement. And as long as the manufacturer comes in and does that, and that's what it's designed for, this permit, that's great. That's great for the local dealer. That's also great for the dealer in Ohio, because someone that's at the rally at Ohio from Ohio can see the equipment, touch it, feel it, ride it, and then go back and buy it. So, you know, we don't want to cut off their arms, but we want to be able to have them do it according to what the statute says.
Thank you. Any other questions? Further proponents of House Bill 1150. Good morning, Director Helmer.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Deb Helmer, Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. We do rise in support of this bill and did work with the industry to make the fees uniform. And the reason that we asked them to do that was a couple twofold. One was that, as you well know, or those of you that have been to the Sturgis Rally well know, it's a very, very congested area during that period of time. And it no longer is just Sturgis. It actually ranges anywhere from Belle Fourche area clear down to Hot Springs. And we have a number of staff that are out there working the area, whether it be our revenue agents in the sales tax area or our dealer inspectors for the dealer licensing area. And it makes it very difficult to try to explain all these fees when you have different fees depending on what you're doing to these individuals. So we ask that the fees be made uniform and that the fee just be a flat $250 fee if you buy it in advance. If we have to come out and find you and catch you doing something, then the fee goes up to $500. And I hate to say it that way, but I have to tell you, what we have seen in the past is a number of businesses that have licensed with us in previous years, and we send them renewal notices or reminder notices long before the rally starts and tell them what the requirements are in the law. We have to actually go out and find these people during the rally, because they'll come and hope that they can get by without having to buy the permit, that perhaps we won't find them, that they've set up in a new location, whatever the case may be. So we're just trying to simplify the administrative process for ourselves as well as for the rest of the staff. And I will tell you, we had 117 permits sold at the Sturgis rally last year, and only 23 of those for the rally, and only 23 of those were sold at the actual rally. So the majority of people do comply. If I might just expand a little bit on what Senator Howey's question was to Myron Rao, we do verify that the business is in good standing with their jurisdiction. So for somebody to just change a name, and we did talk about this before Myron put the bill in, we verify that information. We make sure they're in good standing. For them to go and set up a whole new business, they would have to create a whole new licensing in their jurisdiction, have a whole new bond and everything else. And we just don't think that would probably be cost effective for them to do that. And really what we're trying to do is get people to comply. So we do support the bill, and we do feel that the fee change as well as the penalty provision will at least, we're not saying it's going to be the answer to everything, but at least I think will set the stage for us to see how it works. I, too, received that same phone call from that dealer, so I know exactly what Myron is referring to in the call, and pretty upset about the situation. We did make the individual remove the vehicles from the location, so he could not have them displayed in any manner. He had to remove them. But he also had other things that he was selling, accessories-type units as well. So we did not make him at that particular point leave the rally. But this, I think, will help us in the future of getting them to comply with what our laws are. So from that aspect, we do support this piece of legislation, and hope you can find your way to support it as well. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions of Director Hilmer. Are there any questions of Director Hilmer? Okay. For the proponents of 1150. For the proponents of House Bill 1150. If there are no further proponents of House Bill 1150, are there any opponents of House Bill 1150? Any proponents of House Bill 1150? Since there are no opponents, Senator Schmidt, we won't make you give a rebuttal. Further questions by the committee? If there are none, the public testimony on House Bill 1150 is now closed, and we'll open up for discussion and or action on House Bill 1150. Senator Maher. It's been moved by Senator Maher for a due pass. Is there a second? Senator Frisley seconds. Senator Maher has made the motion for a due pass on House Bill 1150 and been seconded by Senator Frisley. Is there any discussion? If there is no further discussion, the secretary will call the roll. Say aye if you're in favor. Opposed, say nay.
Senators Frisley?
Aye.
Hansen? Howey?
Aye.
Klocek?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Valley?
Aye.
601.
House Bill 1150 has passed by a vote of 6-0 and 1 excused. And we'll go to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Frisley.
Would move consent.
Senator Frisley has moved due past, or has moved consent. Does he get a second? Senator Schmidt has seconded the motion for sending... I'm probably going to say no, because I think we are raising a fee, and so I think it cannot go on consent. So that was a nice try, Senator Frisley, and I think he maybe had a deal with Senator Schmidt so he didn't have to plug the bill on the floor, but I'm going to nix that. So House Bill 1150 will go to the floor as a due pass. The next bill up is House Bill 1202, and that is a bill to permit certain persons with insulin-treated diabetes to get an endorsement on a commercial driver's license to drive a school bus. Public testimony is now open on House Bill 1150. Welcome, Representative Fain.
Thank you, Senator Valley, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and Mr. Chairman, may I commend you on that good decision you just made. Typically, by nature, those House bills are quite important and need to be thoroughly reviewed. So I think that was a good call. We trained you well, Senator. I bring you here today House Bill 1202 that would allow opportunity for people with insulin-treated diabetes to get a waiver on their CDL to drive school buses. We have two or three other proponents lined up to follow, so I will not go into too many details, but I'd like the committee to consider a couple things, that it is, in fact, hard to find good school bus drivers as it is. I think you'll hear here in this testimony later today that there are some good bus drivers excluded unnecessarily because of the current law that we have. I also should mention that people with diabetes, the only exemptions now that in South Dakota that they aren't able to achieve for CDL license is school buses. People with insulin-treated diabetes can currently drive semis, fuel trucks, other things that I'd submit to you are quite big responsibilities, and our state has found a way to exempt these folks in that area, so I think we can show you that school buses are equally safe with persons driving who have been properly treated. Just to run through the bill, this bill shows that diabetics seeking this exemption would prove that they've had an exam by a doctor, also by an optometrist, and a diabetes specialist before they could be waived. They must certify they've had 5 years of incident-free diabetes-related incidents, that they've had 5 years with none before they can be considered for a waiver. The bill was amended in the House to add a daily log of their morning blood tests, which they already take. They have to get a count every morning now because of their disease, and they would be logging these daily. And also, I may point out that they would need to recertify for this waiver every 2 years. So there are a lot of built-in safeguards involved in this, more so than probably any other CDL waiver that exists today in state law. Of course, we understand the sensitive nature of driving a school bus and would expect that there'd be more regulations to follow. And as you'll hear from our further proponents, they're prepared to follow this protocol to the letter to make sure that the insulin-treated diabetics are following the rules. And I'd also, before I go, I'd like to point out one thing. It's my belief, first of all, I'm not a diabetic. I don't totally understand all the hardships they go through, but I am overweight, and I wonder if maybe I wouldn't be more dangerous driving a school bus than a diabetic that's had that's had many, many exams to prove that they're capable of driving. You know, I'm a walking heart attack. How do you know that's not going to happen when you're driving a school bus? And I know there's a lot of people bigger than me driving school buses. So I'm testifying before this committee that I think these people may be safer than some of the folks that we've already got behind the wheel. So please consider that as well as you consider House Bill 1202. With that, I'll let the folks who know much more about this than I testify before you, and I'll stand by for any further questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Fain. Further proponents on House Bill 1202.
Good morning. Representative Fain covered several aspects of what I may...
Would you identify yourself and who you're representing?
My name is Tim Steichen. I'm representing the South Dakota School Transportation Association. As I was beginning to say, Representative Fain did cover a few of the items that I was going to cover today, and I think I'll be a little bit repetitive, but I think it's a good enough issue that we can hear it more than once. As I said, my name is Tim Steichen, and I am the president of the South Dakota School Transportation Association. I am also the transportation supervisor for the Watertown School District. I appreciate the opportunity to voice support on behalf of the association membership and myself for HB 1202. The South Dakota School Transportation Association is made up of private school busing contractors and public school transportation departments from across South Dakota. We range from the largest, such as School Bus Incorporated of Sioux Falls and the Rapid City School District, to the more modest, such as Walter Transportation of Iroquois and the Waverly South Shore School District. Some of our missions are driver training, keeping abreast of new products in school busing industry, and like today, legislation as it pertains to school transportation. We are heavily involved in all aspects of school transportation in this state. The entire delegation that represented the state of South Dakota at the 14th National Congress on School Transportation in 2005, where standards in school bus construction and operations are conceived, was made up entirely of South Dakota School Transportation Association members. Recognizing the ever-growing problem of school bus driver shortages and retention, the association membership has voted to pursue legislation that would provide a course of action for an insulin-dependent person to follow in order to acquire a commercial driver's license with a school bus endorsement. The end result being that person would hold a license to drive a school bus within the state of South Dakota. HB 1202 is that legislation. A case in point, this past summer, a colleague of mine, Rick Meyer, the owner of BJ School Buses of Scotland, was searching for a school bus driver in Yankton and had only two applicants. One of those was a gentleman with insulin-dependent diabetes, but has never had a hypoglycemic reaction. He was nonetheless disqualified by law. Therefore, in a city the size of Yankton, he had only one qualified applicant. HB 1202 would allow those people who are insulin-dependent for the purpose of controlling their disease to receive a waiver only after fulfilling all the set requirements of the bill as amended. Any person unable to meet the requirements would still be ineligible to receive a school bus endorsement and therefore could not drive a school bus in South Dakota. HB 1202 would also have the added benefit of giving a driver that is currently diabetic and controls their condition with oral medication, exercise, and diet, but may be better off with insulin injection, the opportunity to do that without the loss of their school bus endorsement. Just such a scenario has recently played out for one of my own drivers. After a doctor's visit about a month ago, he was advised he should start taking insulin injections. He was resistant to the idea because he knew it would be the end of his 14-year school busing career. If this legislation had been in place, he would have known he had a course of action to take so he could attempt to keep the job he loved. And believe me when I say you don't have a 14-year school bus driving career without loving it. You will have the opportunity to hear from this person. He will be testifying on his own behalf in just a moment. In 1993, the Federal Highway Administration began a federal waiver study program to determine the associated risk based on accident involvement of allowing commercial motor vehicle operators with insulin-dependent diabetes to drive interstate. Their actual study results indicated a lower accident rate than the national accident rate for all other commercial motor vehicle drivers. This can be attributed in large part to the fact that diabetics who carefully monitor their disease to be in compliance with the regulations are better able to control their health issues. Congress saw the need to end the 33-year-old blanket discrimination against people with insulin-treated diabetes when in 2005 they passed legislation allowing for the current interstate federal waiver program for commercial motor vehicle drivers. In another action, the United States Justice Department in 1998 settled two separate complaints against the Arizona Department of Transportation and the North Carolina Division of Motor Vehicles. Both complaints stemmed from state officials forcing school districts to fire existing drivers that had begun using insulin injection years after they had begun driving school buses. The Justice Department concluded that both Arizona and North Carolina enforced these laws without regard to whether a person's condition actually prevented him or her from safely driving a bus. The Justice Department said this was contrary to the requirement of the Federal Americans with Disabilities Act. In the agreement, North Carolina agreed to enact new regulations. Arizona already had. The states will evaluate diabetics who use insulin individually to see whether the disorder can be controlled and monitored. Those allowed to drive school buses will be subject to continued safety monitoring. Similar guidelines are included in HB 1202. At least 11 other states allow a waiver such as HB 1202 allows. These states have requirements much like those contained in this bill, which specifically detail qualifications an applicant must meet to be able to drive a school bus within South Dakota. I would like to point out, as I understand the laws and regulations as they currently apply, the only group of driving professionals that have no recourse once they start taking insulin to control their condition and maintain their health in the state of South Dakota are school bus drivers. All others either have the option of attempting to acquire a federal waiver allowing them to drive interstate, which includes South Dakota, or they drive only intrastate within the confines of South Dakota, in which case there is no medical requirement. Therefore, since the U.S. Department of Transportation does not regulate qualifications for school bus drivers intrastate, this bill has been introduced to allow certain diabetics whose disease is well under control to be able to drive a school bus within the state. In conclusion, to help in the recruitment of new drivers and the retention of active drivers, the South Dakota School Transportation Association respectfully requests your support of HB 1202 as amended. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Does the committee have any questions at this point? Further proponents of House Bill 1202. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Del Birch from Watertown, South Dakota, and I'm a former Watertown school bus driver. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House Bill number 1202. I've been diabetic since 1991. I was able to control my diabetes with oral medication, exercise, and diet for a number of years. A year ago, I was borderline to becoming insulin dependent. I chose not to go on the insulin so that I could continue to drive bus. In mid-January, my blood sugars became higher, and I was told by my doctor that I needed to go on insulin. Against her advice, I did not take insulin. She reported me to the Division of Transportation, and my driver's license was suspended. After 15 years of driving, I lost my employment, a job that I really enjoyed, working with the students. I would really appreciate if you would consider passing this bill so that others wouldn't find themselves in the same situation. Thank you very much for listening and for your consideration.
Thank you. Questions? Any questions at this point? We may have questions when we get through here. further proponents of House Bill 1202.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Steve High. I am a president and co-owner of School Bus Inc. We're a private firm located in Sioux Falls. We are in our 30th year of providing school, charter, and route school bus transportation to the Sioux Falls School District. And in addition, we have a wide range of additional public and private customers. We are also members in good standing of the South Dakota School Transportation Association.
Are you testifying this morning on yourself or with the association, or who are you representing, or yourself?
I'm representing myself and my company. At our terminal in Sioux Falls, we employ over 150 full and part-time employees and operate a fleet in excess of 100 vehicles. As you've heard this morning, in recent years, our industry has suffered from a chronic shortage of drivers. This is true in larger labor markets such as Sioux Falls, but also in rural areas as well. House Bill 1202 helps to alleviate that shortage by opening up another group of potential driver applicants, that being those drivers who have insulin-treated diabetes. HB 1202 has important safeguards in place, though, to ensure that those drivers would receive a waiver to operate a school bus if and only if they meet the safeguards and stringent requirements of the bill. As you've heard this morning, current federal law currently does provide such a waiver that applies to interstate travel. HB 1202, of course, would apply to intrastate travel. And in addition to patterning our bill on that federal waiver, we have also solicited and received input from the American Diabetes Association. States are free to provide such a waiver for intrastate travel, and indeed a number of states have already done so. You've heard that at least 11 states have a waiver on the books, and by way of example, one state, Michigan, has had a law on the books in excess of 20 years, which certainly suggests that if the law is properly drafted and administered, it can and does work well. In considering this bill, we are ever mindful that safety is paramount. So HB 1202 contains numerous important safeguards patterned after the federal waiver designed to ensure that only those diabetics that have successfully managed their condition would be eligible and would receive a waiver. These safeguards may indeed even be more stringent than those of other states with laws already on the books. Specifically, those requirements in HB 1202 would include a full medical evaluation, full review of medical history, documentation of freedom from a number of different types of severe hypoglycemic episode types for a period of 5 years prior to the waiver being received, which patterns again the federal waiver provisions. A medical review that confirms an applicant understands his condition and has demonstrated a willingness and ability to successfully manage it. In addition, a signed statement that the applicant does not have diabetic retinopathy or other eye conditions that are associated with diabetes. The driver that has had a severe hypoglycemic episode after receiving the waiver loses that waiver and is not eligible to reapply for another year. The waiver is valid for only a period of 2 years, after which the applicant must reapply and must again meet all the criteria before the waiver can be renewed. In addition, as you've heard this morning, a couple of additional amendments have been made in the House that further strengthen these provisions, including that the driver must now monitor his condition or take readings of his blood sugar each morning before he drives, and if his shift exceeds 90 minutes, he must take a second reading and must document those readings for his employer. In addition, the driver must also have an annual physical, so that even though the waiver is for a period of 2 years, he must continue to receive annual physicals to make sure that his health remains stable. There are a couple of important policy goals that are advanced by this legislation. First, as we've mentioned already, it will help to alleviate the driver shortages that we have experienced throughout the state of South Dakota. Those driver shortages, especially in areas of declining population, figure to only be exacerbated in the coming years. In addition, as population ages, the incidence of diabetes may indeed increase, especially the adult onset type of diabetes, which will further provide value for this legislation. In addition, another important goal that's advanced is just what you've already seen before you this morning. Drivers who would choose to drive a school bus because that opportunity is meaningful to them, that work is meaningful to them in terms of transporting our children, either cannot apply or lose their privilege to drive because of diabetes onset that involves insulin treatment. This bill provides a waiver that allows them to drive if and only if they prove that they have stable health and the ability to effectively manage their condition. As you no doubt are well aware, in our industry, safety is our top priority. There is nothing that exceeds it. The safety of our children is paramount. We would not be here this morning if we had any concerns that this proposed legislation would put our children in jeopardy. In fact, the safeguards in this bill are crafted specifically with that in mind, to ensure that an insulin-dependent diabetic can receive a waiver to drive if and only if he meets these important criteria. So we ask that you please favorably consider this bill. I appreciate very much the opportunity to testify this morning, and I and my colleagues are certainly here to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hay. I do want to say that you are here representing yourself. If you're going to represent your company, you have to be licensed, as I said at the beginning of this meeting. You have to go and get a lobbyist badge from the Secretary of State. So this morning I'm going to offer that you are speaking for yourself, correct?
Yes, thank you.
Any questions at this point for Mr. A? Senator Klocek.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of easy questions, I guess. The Section 3 that was added over in the House, that in your testimony you said morning, but that applies to any time they drive the bus. Maybe you were not morning, noon, night, 24/7, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Before any shift, the driver would have that on a particular day.
Question, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Last year, and I do appreciate that Section 3. That was the amendment I was looking for last year that would have taken care of most of my concerns. The Medical Association last year, my understanding, vehemently opposed this legislation. I see do you have their concerns addressed this year?
Yes. In terms of, we received a letter from the American Diabetes Association. Their concern last year was that as the bill had been drafted last year, it actually departed a little bit from the language of the federal waiver. Specifically, once the waiver has been granted under the proposed legislation, if a driver would have a severe hypoglycemic reaction after the waiver had been granted, the bill as drafted last year would require a waiting period of 5 years before reapplication. The American Diabetes Association objected to that because it's a year waiting period under the federal waiver statute or regulations, and they felt that 5 years was too long to wait, and it was their position that our language should track the federal language, and that so there would be a one-year waiting period instead of a five-year waiting period. So with that amendment, it's our understanding that their concerns have been addressed.
One final question, Mr. Chairman. Okay, so bear with me through this scenario. We have a situation in a bus driver goes through and does all the things that you have in this legislation, and then near the end of his trip he has a reaction and passes out or goes into a semi-coma state or whatever, and there's an accident. And the doctor, you know, okayed it, everything was okay. Who bears that liability? Does the driver bear that liability, the bus company, or the doctor that approved him?
Right.
And I know you're not an attorney, and it'd be a, but.
Good question. Obviously, the provisions of the statute are designed to make the risks of something like that happening as absolutely minimal as possible. You know, it would be analogous to a situation of where a driver would have a heart attack while driving the school bus. You know, in that circumstance too, it'd be the same type of situation, just caused by a different underlying cause. So while we can't obviously guarantee that something will not occur, again, the statute is designed to minimize that risk, or the bill, excuse me, is designed to minimize that risk as much as possible. I assume that liability would be assessed much in the same way it would be if there were a heart attack associated with it instead of a diabetic reaction. We certainly, you know, there are insurance requirements that apply statewide in terms of having insurance. We have insurance. All of our colleagues have insurance. So to address specifically liability concerns and, you know, frankly, how that would attach and how that would be sorted out, I'm frankly not sure. I'm sure everyone would be invited to that party, though.
Further questions?
Mr. Chairman. If there's no other questions, I'd like to redirect that question to Representative Fain. He would maybe know.
Okay.
Answer that. Could I? Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. I guess.
Identify yourself.
I'm sorry. Representative Bob Fain, District 5, Watertown. I guess, Senator, my answer would be much the same. I think the question of liability, anytime you have an accident, especially when you're dealing with something regarding school buses or mass transit of any nature, I'm sure that's open for the court's discretion. I think this allows the school districts an opportunity to have records showing that they have been, in fact, keeping on top of this driver's diabetic situation, and both the driver and the school would have some documentation, at least, that they've been keeping a close eye on it, the daily log. I also may, somewhat of a sidebar to the question, in the House Health and Human Services Committee, where this bill first went through, one of the members of that committee is a EMT, and during the testimony there, he described a typical event where there is a insulin or diabetic related event that they get called to with his ambulance. He said typically in those situations, you'll get a call that there's a car just sitting in the street, not going anywhere, and the driver seems non-responsive. So his point was, usually in these situations, the driver can tell something is coming, and most often they'll see them just sitting in the middle of the road, stopped in somewhat of I guess it's somewhat of a comatose situation of the ones that he's responded to. So hopefully there would never be an incident any more severe than that, but of course nothing can be guaranteed.
Go ahead, Senator Klobuchar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Fain, in your earlier testimony, you know, we're very concerned about your health if you would be a bus driver, too. Are you, you know, seeing the doctor of the day on your heart condition all that so you can drive buses as well? Or?
Well, Mr. Chairman, as you're well aware, Wednesday is the beginning of Lent, and I've sworn off Big Macs.
So. Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fain. Good luck on your losing weight.
Thank you, sir.
Further questions by the committee? I do have one, and maybe it's Mr. Stricken that could answer it probably as good as anyone. How do we know if a driver has had this type of reaction? If they have this, let's say it's at home, is it the doctor's duty to report this? How could they just say, I haven't had any reaction? How do we know that that has happened? Is there some obligation by the doctor when he sees them to, if you could help me there?
Well, as I would see it, there's always that possibility of concealment. Maybe that's the word I'm looking for. However, I think if it's a severe enough reaction, which I believe is what the bill covers, is it would be something that would be noted either by, you know, someone calling an ambulance or that sort of thing. I guess I can't say there would not be the possibility of concealment by someone who had a minor reaction, hypoglycemic reaction. But, and we all hope that we associate with honest people, that when asked, have you had one, that they would be forthcoming with that information. That would be how I see that at this time.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Hay, if you have a comment to that. Identify yourself again when you...
Yes, again, my name is Steve High. Mr. Chairman, if I could respond briefly to your question, in addition to Mr. Steichen's comments, I would note that the bill as drafted makes provision not only for a physical examination but also a comprehensive review of the applicant's medical records. So if he has that type of severe reaction in the past, I would certainly state that it would be highly unlikely that he would have that type of reaction and not have gotten any type of medical treatment at all, so that there should be some record of that that reaction. And it obviously wouldn't be logical to think that someone would intentionally not get treatment for that type of severe reaction, thinking to himself, because I may want to try to drive school bus someday. So I think that does address that concern. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. High. Further questions of the proponents? Okay, are there opponents of, I'll ask if there are any more proponents of House Bill 1202? Any further proponents, House Bill 1202? If there are no further proponents, are there opponents of House Bill 1202? Any opponents of House Bill 1202? If there are no opponents, we will excuse Representative Fain from making a rebuttal. at this time, are there any further questions, as we do have a little time this morning, this is the last bill, if there's any further questions. If there are no further questions, we will close the public testimony on House Bill 1202 and move to discussion and or action. Senator Klocek.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think they've got a good bill here. I'm just absolutely amazed that you got the Medical Association to be neutral on this. That speaks volumes for your efforts. The Section 3 was the one that I was concerned about. That's the spillover, I guess, or the one that really makes the bill work. The only thing wrong with this bill is my name isn't on it. We do appreciate the work the two prime sponsors did on the bill. This spring and summer after the bill was defeated last year, it was 1264 last year. I did a tremendous amount of research. I pestered the Medical Association, Dr. Van Etten, the prime opponent of the bill, and Dean Krogman's answering machine on numerous occasions, trying to find a solution to this. I do think that this is as good as you possibly can get, and I do think that that we need to move the bill out. There is one area that you could use to get more drivers that hasn't been mentioned today, and maybe not in your case, but maybe some other bus drivers, managers, is to increase the wages and benefits as well. And that might be a way to get a few more drivers. I know that affects your profitability, but if you can't get them any other way, that also works. But with that, Mr. Chairman, I would move due pass on this House Bill 1202.
It's been moved due pass by Senator Klocek. Is there a second? Second by Senator Frisley. It's been moved by Senator Klocek and seconded by Senator Klocek to a due pass motion on House Bill 1202. Any further discussion? If there is no further discussion, the Secretary will call the roll. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed say nay.
Senators Frisley?
Aye.
Hansen? Howie?
Aye.
Klocek?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Valley?
Aye.
601, excuse.
Consent, Mr. Chairman.
House Bill 1202 has passed by a vote of 6 in favor, no opponents, and 1 excused. It will move to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chairman, consent.
Senator Klocek.
Consent. Move consent.
It's been moved by Senator Klocek to move it to the consent calendar. Is there a second? Seconded by Senator Frisley. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. It will not flow to the consent calendar. That concludes the calendar that we have. Is there anything else to come before the committee this morning? If there is not, I think on Wednesday we will probably start at 7:45. We're going to put several bills on the calendar so that we can start taking them and don't run into problems for the end of the year. So we will, or end of the session. So we'll probably start at 7:45 on Wednesday. And if there is no other further business, the chair will entertain a motion for adjournment. Senator Klocek, is there a second? Seconded by Senator Schmidt. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Meeting is adjourned.